Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by Witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
And good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening to this. And it could be any time, any place, any time after this very moment, because, you know, our files and our archives are eternal. You know, there's going to be a day our descendants are going to be listening to this, and they're going to go, oh, the great ancestors on the Pagans Tonight podcast. And I'm Ed the Pagan, and I'm so glad that you continue to make us part of your day and part of your lives, and keeping us one of the highest rated podcasts in the world. And I really am so appreciative of that. Today, we're going to talk more about business. I've been off, you know, a couple of days, birthday and all that, and going out to the weekend. Got to see Tribal Stomp. Saw Wendy Rule, Jason Winslade. Got to see our good friend Alan Salmi. Went to the Parliament event and learned, showed that we have to do a lot more work in Chicago to get a lot more recognition. They don't really haven't seen us really evolve in the last 20 years. So that's a thing in Chicago. And I bet you that's going to be true almost everywhere. We're not that known to interfaith organizations. So we're working on that still. And on my birthday, yesterday, I launched the pre-ordering for my book that's coming out in May, The Secret Art of Witch Wars, the updated version of Witch Wars Defense Manual from 2005. And, man, the world has changed. And there's a lot of things that haven't changed. There's a lot of basics that are still out there that are human nature. But, man, some of the tricks and tools of what happens when you get after you get accused of being a witch and how many different ways you can be burned out in our society is dramatic. I found a new one called Flying Monkey Syndrome. It's a real syndrome around narcissists. And I see it in our community a lot. So check it out on Indiegogo. Check out my Facebook page or anywhere else. But today we're with Bernadette Montana of Brigid's Closet. And she maintains a shop, and she has festivals, and she does a lot of work. She's a third degree priestess in the progressive ways, and tarot and everything else. But I'm gonna let her describe herself. Other things, I think there's some interesting tribal stuff that she does. But most importantly, one of the things she does is that in this day and age, she runs events, festivals, and a shop out in Orange County, New York, or Cornwall, New York.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Yeah, we kind of do a lot here, and it's Breed's Closet after the goddess Breed. Yeah, after my goddess, Breed or Bridget, or as she's sometimes known as Saint Bridget. And so I named the business after her, and I've been in business for about 20 years now, so it's been quite a ride. You know, over these many years, and as you had mentioned, you could see things have changed in over the two decades that I've been doing this, you know?
Absolutely. So you started out, two decades. So you started out, what, 99? 2000?
Yeah, right around that time. Yeah, and I started in New Paltz, which was another town, and then eventually I migrated over here to Cornwall.
Okay. So I feel like that's the last of the great times where shops really formed up, was like in the late 90s. The surviving shops tend to be from that period of time, because it's got to be tough, because now you're competing against – so before you used to compete locally, you know, who could you attract locally and everything else. But now you're competing against an entire spectrum of different competitors, and some of them come right into your house and that kind of mug you.
Yes. I've dealt with all when you said witch wars and all that. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's one of the reasons why I'm writing the manual. I think I have a whole section in there about merchants and the problems that merchants face.
Yeah, it's a big problem with certain people, because I think, and I know a lot of other store owners would agree, that if you own a store, then you become the center of the community, and then you have to not just serve, you know, your store's needs, but you serve the needs of community, and not everybody in the community is all there. So like when you mentioned narcissism and other things in regards to your book, that really hit home.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, thank you. But I want to get more into where you're at. So you, that's a very interesting point. I interviewed the Occult Society yesterday, which was formerly known as the Occult Bookstore. And they, because they did so much community work, ended up giving up being a store and now have become a church because of the fact that they were so much at the center of their community. So
right.
You see stores as a center of a community.
It is that, because they're the most public out there, because nobody, you know, goes to newspapers anymore. Everything is on Facebook or on the internet at the very least. And, you know, businesses like that have to be up to date. And as a result, they're out there. People see. You know, you could type in witch or witchcraft and your local store will come up if there's one there, you know, or the one that is closest to you. But I tell you what has changed over the years is where at first retail was the thing that supported the store. Now that's not the case. It's the services that support the store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If it's retail, it's actually for the non-metaphysical community that happen to walk in town. And then they buy a lot of, you know, unique items. But that's not the case anymore. Pretty much the services, classes, the events, the festivals. That's what supports stores nowadays.
Well, it seems like that basically the idea of experiences is now becoming the essential aspect of being in the pagan community, regardless if you're running a high priest, running a temple or a store, things like that.
Right.
Do you feel, because in part, information is plentiful now. And I know there's a lot of older leaders who really don't like the fact that the younger Zoomers, late boom millennials and early Zoomers are all super filled with knowledge. I mean, they know everything. And they're like, but you guys wrote all those books and made all those kits and did all of this work to get them educated. And then they find out that a lot older don't like the fact that these kids feel familiar with the material. And then
right.
they go, well, they have no experience. Well, no, that's the problem. They have no experience.
Right.
And so that seems to be the next step.
Yeah, to me that's 100% correct, because a lot of people will read a book and they go, oh, great, I'm a witch now, and I'll do that. I think what we try to do here in the community as well is I do have a cousin, and I do have a large community here in Orange County, New York, but I also try to strive to help the solitaries, which is a little bit different than maybe a lot of people do. And that is just to help them with that knowledge and understand that experience is actually far more important than what any book can give you. You know, how do you teach relationship with deity from a book?
Well, so books provide the information and structure, and I understand.
Sure.
That. And there are people who teach themselves out of books. Got it. You know, and actually that's almost a trope in our community for a long time. So this is not new. I think what's new is that they're – so what I think that's the thing that's new, and I think – so I want to get it from a perspective. So you do a lot of classes, a lot of shops. You're doing a festival soon. I see you do more than one festival. Your next one coming up is Beltane?
Yes, that's our Beltane Festival on May 2nd.
And talk a little bit about that, because that's probably like a place where people can come and get experiences.
Yeah, it really is. It is, well, I rent a vineyard here. So obviously right off the bat, we have wine and mead available to everybody. But we have about 60 to 70 vendors, all metaphysical in nature. We have workshops that go on throughout the day from local leaders and then others. Like this year we have, well, we're still working on it, but right now Lilith Dorsey is going to be a part of our teachers that are on board, and we have Frenchie and the Punk as far as music, but I'm still working on a lot more. It's still a little bit early. And so
sure.
with the workshops, music throughout the day, and all of the different stores, people get an idea as to what we do. And then we hold like the largest maypole dance in Orange County. So we have hundreds of people participating. That we've had weddings there, we've had engagements there. It's a wonderful time. And then everybody's all in costume and dress. So it's almost like a mini Ren festival. And it's open to everybody. It's for children, it's for adults, it's for everybody to come. It's a lot of fun.
Gotcha. It sounds like it. And that's way for
people
to get exposure and things like that.
Yeah, we get about 700-800 people every year.
So that's an important aspect. And so having a shop, because you have the rent, utilities,
yes,
any employee costs,
right,
mm-hmm, stocking fees, and then the storage of value can get out of, the biggest thing that I've seen hurt pagan stores or Wiccan stores or metaphysical stores is the weight of their product, is the best way to phrase it. Meaning,
right,
they end up getting so much product that they don't turn it over well.
Mm-hmm.
That gives the burden up. So how do you stay alive in this day and age?
I kind of learned to go with the flow, and the needs of the community flow and ebb a lot. So, one author might be hot this year, or a certain type of crystal for some reason will sell a lot more one month and then nothing the next month. You got to figure out what your basics are that everybody will need, like something like sage and quartz, your almanacs. Those are like the basics. Incense will always sell. But the other stuff can be kind of tricky, and you're going to have to kind of pick and choose that. What I've also learned is wherever a store opens up, you should immerse yourself into the local community, even if it's not metaphysical. So I'm very active politically in the town, and I'm very active with my Chamber of Commerce. And I really make myself nobody's indispensable, but I'm a necessary part of the town in supporting all the businesses as a whole. And in doing that, the people then realize I'm not so spooky, I'm not so scary, and that I contribute a lot into the town. And then they'll support me. So it's kind of making good with your neighbor.
Gotcha. Because I think that's one of the things that I think a lot of shopkeepers have a problem with, is that they get in, it depends on where you are in the country. So you seem to have good neighbors, and that's an important factor. How did you...
At the beginning, it wasn't.
That doesn't ask you. How did you get there?
It's what I was saying, like joining your local chamber of commerce. Be thick-skinned. If somebody says something that is a little, offensive, like, hey, I thought you did this, and I'm like, oh, come on. Use a little bit of humor and be an active part. In other words, the town has festivals that they put on, and I volunteer for those things. I attend the local meetings. I talk to people one at a time, letting them know what I do and dispelling a lot of myths. It's taking a long time, but now that has worked for me.
I got you. That makes good sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that makes good sense. I mean, that you have
Pagans
worked
have
out
to,
and you've done that.
Pagans have to try harder.
Well, I think anyone who wants to be successful is try harder. I'm a big believer in the 99-1 rule, which means 90% of the people really just want to watch or be entertained. 9% of people will activate or be a part of it, and only 1% really means what they say and will carry out their actions. This has been true.
No, that's very good. Mm-hmm.
And I think this is true of pagans. I think when people complain, oh, they're not really pagans because they're not really trying, they don't realize,
right,
90% of the people don't try it. 100% of the people don't try it 90% of what they're exposed to. And only about 10% of your life is really the stuff that most people really want to work on. And unfortunately,
right,
it should be the other way around.
I agree with you.
You should.
I absolutely agree with you. Mm-hmm.
But we're caught in a structure. We're caught in a system. We're caught in a culture. I mean, people always laugh. It says we're better than ants only in the degree that we feel like we've got more capability. But I guarantee if we were ants, we'd feel just as happy.
Right.
Because because we do have because we do have this sort of structure to society that we like to follow. And so people buck the trend, like yourself, because obviously not everybody opens shops. And let me be honest with you, shopkeeping is one of the hardest aspects of the pagan community. And yet it's kind of one of the biggest backbones of the community.
It's hard. It's hard to be self-employed. It's hard to do that in certain communities. It's not easy at all.
Well, let me tell you, I don't think it's easy in any community, but I think that but we're exposed to it because one of the things that the idea of is that how do you combat the idea of pagan poverty? I mean, the idea, oh, we really can't afford to have a shop. We really can't afford this stuff. How do you get through that? How do you maintain? Obviously, you're doing pretty well and you're thriving. I mean, at least I hope you are.
Yeah.
Because you're still there.
It is a tough thing when people really don't have money, and I'm sure a lot of other storekeepers will understand that. A lot of people would just come in here and hang to talk about, you know, their fears or what they want to learn about paganism and such like that, especially young ones. They'll come and buy a candle, or they'll buy 2 sticks of incense, which is, you know, 35 cents and all that. But down the line, I believe that it helps. You know, you might be kind to somebody and help them out, and they've only spent $1, but down the line, they learn to really appreciate the work that you've done for them. I won't say that that's true with everybody, but most of the people, you know, that I think most pagan store owners try to help, they're also kind of meek, you know what I mean? It's like they're a little afraid to talk to people and afraid to buy things. They're not so sure if this is their path. Down the line, if you're kind to them and you're good to these people, eventually they come back, or at least the word spreads, you know, and then people go, oh, I heard you helped somebody else with this. Maybe you can help me. And then, you know, it's kind of word of mouth.
Absolutely. So that's an important aspect. Now, do you have an internet aspect at all to your business?
I do have a website, and I have a really large Facebook presence.
So you have a bit of it, but you're still primarily a brick and mortar stores and doing brick and mortar events.
Yeah, I don't sell too much online. What really supports the store more than anything else is my tarot readings and my tarot business, which, you know, I do a weekly show in regards to tarot, and I do classes that I do online too, but I also do that through Facebook. So that's been a really big plus for me. Kind of have to keep up to date with whatever tools are given to you.
That makes sense. So people may want to think they want to start a shop. So what would be your best advice of telling them that they should, and maybe even why they should, you know, that sort of thing?
All right. I mean, it's very satisfying to accomplish things. When you open up the store and you see that there's the need that is there, that is very, very satisfying. And helping people out in regard to the spirituality is probably one of the biggest highs that I get from this. It wasn't always so. I was a little nervous at first. I wasn't so used to being in the public eye, as it were, you know. But now, after all these many years, I've acclimated myself to that. It is very satisfying, and I love what I do because paganism is, or, you know, I try to work with everybody here, all sorts of spiritualists, not just Wiccans, and it's not just heathens, and it's not just, it's everybody that's pretty much earth-based. We run book clubs and the events, the public rituals. That's the biggest plus, I think, from all of this. The biggest thing against it is the sheer amount of hours that you have to put into this. Sometimes I'm at the store for over 10 hours a day. And the second thing are kind of like the witch wars. So, you know, sometimes other people may be a bit intimidated and will then come out attacking, or you didn't help them enough, or not everybody is stable. So you have to deal with certain things like that, you know. I have lots of stories on that end, but I would say that the pluses outweigh the minuses. If you can meet your monthly bills, you know, it's a few thousand a month that you need to really make this work, and you have to develop your clientele. So it doesn't happen overnight. So you really have to be on top of things.
Oh, I see it. Yep.
Yes.
I do. I'm not one for a shop. I've ran shops myself, and they're really tough to run, and they do have this aspect of it, and those who can succeed at them, I absolutely do. But I do think that one of the biggest mistakes people make is underestimating, like you said, the time, and as you mentioned, the capital needed to get started. I mean, everybody thinks that they're going to open the shop and the world's going to come to them.
Oh,
we suffer from that sort of reality. And I guess that optimism is necessary, or else nobody would ever open a shop.
Correct.
I do think that's probably more true than I. So and you're a woman business owner, and I've been. Does that make a difference, or do you think that has anything to do with it? Do you get treated differently than you think a male counterpart? I mean, I've heard that, or is it just you're okay with where you're at?
I never thought about it as the male female. Thing in regards to opening this type of shop or running this type of shop. I think at least in Orange County, and I could be wrong, so I don't, you know, I'm not going to say this verbatim, but I think most of the shops that I know all around here are all owned by females. So I don't think the male-female thing seems to be an important thing, at least in this part of New York. And I'm pretty close to the city, and you know, to me, a shop like this was almost a dime a dozen when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s and my punk days in New York City. Enchantments was the very first metaphysical shop, and Magical Child with Herman Slater. Those were my first shops growing up. So I'm of that generation. And that inspired me to always want to have a shop like this. And eventually I decided to be able to do that.
That's fascinating. Because you're one of the few areas. You're in few areas where you saw some of the early exposure, and a lot of those shops have not made it. I mean, so people. One thing I think people misunderstand about shops can be eternal. They can last for a very long time, but they too, unless they're managed properly, come and go along the way. Even for people who are really good at shops, they will close down a shop because they will see that it's not working and then work on a new shop. I've seen that. I have actually friends who have done serial shops. In Chicago, my hometown, there was at one time like 15 metaphysical stores in the 90s, and now there's three or four at most.
Right.
The occult books are the oldest in the country, literally the oldest one in the country. It's just had a changeover from a for-profit to a not-for-profit status to maintain their business. Because they had been so badly hit by the internet, so badly hit by, especially with their dealings in rare books. So they saw, and they continue to be this idea of experience. So I do think you made a good move by moving towards experiential, giving people experiences. I think that's going to be really essential. So
I'm agreeing with you. You don't see too many trained witches anymore. I'm trying to say this correctly because I don't want to insult anybody, but you just don't have that type of study anymore. And that's pretty much what I focus on here. So if somebody wants to study with me, they have to know the history. My lineage comes from Janet Farrer and Gavin Bone. And they were the very first pagan book that I ever picked up in my life. And, you know, now they're my teachers. I think it's very important to have good teachers out there, and that they should know what they're talking about, and that will set your store apart from others, as opposed to somebody who just opened up a book and, well, there's nothing wrong with self-study and such. It's good to know where somebody got their training from.
Well, I've said this over the years, and I've said this from the 90s. Our market, so since we don't proselytize and we actually don't promote or recruit, our markets are exceeding our markets, such as Llewellyn and Wiser and all the book dealers and all the kit dealers, are far outstripping us in our ability to teach. This has always been true in the 90s. And I remember hearing the exact same accusations in the 90s, even in the 80s, where, you know, we're getting too many people who learned. And yet the best way that they have is that these marketing, these publishing companies, have long outstripped the capability of anybody, including the teachers, to actually take on students. And then there's a reluctance. And there's a reluctance. You're very good for that. I don't think that you can have many Farrar and Bone students anymore. I mean, they've gotten to a point where they're not taking on that many students, as far as I know. And they can never take on the number of students. And they could never take on the number of students in which they exposed. This is a thing that people don't get. And so you're a front line. So the stores represent that front line where if there is anything out there, it's defined it because, trust me, it's a lot easier to claim to be a teacher and publish 10,000 copies of a book than to claim a teacher and take on 10 students. Easier to publish than students. And and so you're at the front line of that because, well, you've got to be saturated. There's so many books coming out now, right? So how do you keep up with the book flow?
Yes. I mean, I have my favorite authors, and then, you know, there are other books that I think are just a rehash of a lot of stuff. And then there's stuff that comes out that I absolutely don't agree with at all, but that's not for me to decide whether, you know, an author is good or not. I am not an author. I may write a class, but I'm not a book author. But, you know, I'll have, you know, my likes and dislikes with certain things that are out there. I'll bring almost everything in here, but when somebody asks me what do I recommend, I'll lean towards, you know, certain books that at the very least say that I'm familiar with.
That makes sense. So that you're able to give them that exposure and some of that training and some of that essence of it. And like you said, there's a lot of flow of books. So, and I tell people, remember my thing, go to your local bookstore and try to order the book. They can get it as fast as you as Amazon. Even if Amazon gets you a little faster, you can be patient. I find Amazon. Amazon's obviously the biggest tool and biggest usefulness and the biggest problem in our community in the sense of they're all three of it. A lot of people are publishing through Llewellyn now. You know, Llewellyn publishes, but Llewellyn is primarily a captured, unfortunately, they're captured by Amazon too. A majority of their sales go to Amazon. This is a true story, folks. The vast majority of books that Amazon sell, and this means the authors get the least amount of money.
Correct.
Because people don't understand how royalty, and so when you buy from a local bookstore, actually the authors get a little bit more money than if you buy from Amazon. It's a true story. So going to the stores helps both the store and the Llewellyn versus throwing another rocket into space by Bezos. That's what he's getting the extra dollars for. He's throwing rockets into space. I'm all for that, but I'd like to keep a few of those dollars here on Earth.
I think a lot of people think that authors make a lot of money, and they really don't, because I've interviewed a lot of authors, and I've had a lot of authors here, and it's real tough for them to make money. So, you know, events are really exciting and other ways of helping to promote their own work, and certainly buying from stores or from the authors directly themselves will help them.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. There's a true statement to that. The authors are very few authors in history that have ever really made it. I mean, that's a big thing. Even Mark Twain, everybody loves Mark Twain, but Mark Twain was not a successful writer. He was a successful speaker.
Right.
Secret of his success. He was a stand-up comedian of his day.
He was. He was a speaker that people would want to hear, listen to. And then his books did okay. My favorite author, Darwin, who wrote all these great scientific, the biggest book of his life was a gardening book on how the value of worms, earthworms were. It really is. His number one book in his lifetime was about gardening with worms.
Wow.
And so
I did not know that.
It's true. It's absolutely true. He wrote it towards the end of his life, after 3 years of research, and it became his number one selling book. I mean, it actually was a real bestseller. Everything else that he'd written that we all consider so instrumental, not so much. And I think it's true of a lot of authors. So now we're getting into age. Let me go ahead and one thing. So do you deal at all with like antique books or the rarities now that they're starting to come out? I mean, we're finally getting to an age where Sybil Leek's books are more rare. You know, a lot of these early books are more rare. There's first editions. Do you find yourself dealing with that at all, or is that something that you don't deal with very much?
I haven't dealt with that very much, and selfishly, whenever I've come across a book that I would deem as being a real gem like that, I might have that in my own personal collection, something of that, or maybe with my cousin, I'll share some of those there. I would say that since I'm an initiate of Janet and Gavin, certainly I sell a lot of their books, and you know, Janet's A Witch's Bible was one of the very first. So there are a lot of those what I would call classic authors that I really, really believe in and would put their stuff out there. But when it comes to those classic stuff, if it comes across, I might just hold on to some of those things. Or I study a lot of high magic and the Kabbalah as well. So that a lot of that is in my private collection.
So you're a little bit of a bibliophile, huh?
Just a little bit.
Well, I guess that's one of the things that makes it passionate out there for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So let me go ahead. So one of the things I've been talking to a lot of tarot readers, and this is you're on the other side of this. So I get a lot of – I've been talking to a lot of professional tarot readers, and I want to thank everybody who's been on this business week. We're going to do a little bit more on this, I think, but we're also going to start moving on to the next subject, which is going to be about we're going to talk a little bit about community, and we're going to get more into tarot. And you do a tarot class and things like that. But one of the things I've seen tarot readers say is go find out how to start your shop. You know, practice, and then start to look towards your local shop. But when people mention this, I kind of be quiet a little bit. But it's hard because a lot of shops already have readers, so if someone wanted to start and try to read out of your shop, could they?
Yes, and I've had people. It's a little tough because I'm known for my tarot, and I have to put it that way. And I've had people say, "Hey, I took this class for Bernadette, and I know her personally, so, you know, I'm a great tarot reader," and they've gone to other shops, you know, and used my name to throw that around. So I've had people come here, and I'll try them out for a little while, but I've had the best success with my own students. So because at least I know that I've developed a relationship with them. I know where they're at ethically, because ethics are a big thing for me. And if a reader is not good, it reflects back on the store itself pretty badly. So I have not, at least in the past few years, had anybody that I didn't at least have a relationship with. I do have psychic fairs. I do run psychic fairs. And I'll give a lot of people a chance in those settings, because I can see how well they work under pressure and how well they develop, you know, their own style, because everybody is different. Not everybody reads it the same way. And it gives me an idea as to how good they are. I would love to test them out individually, but they'll always be on their best behavior if they do that. So that's not always the litmus test, but watching a reader in action is probably the best way that I will vet readers here. You know, somebody comes to you and you could really hurt them with a bad reading, and I would never want that to happen.
Well, that makes good sense that you wouldn't want that to happen. Of course not. I mean, it's your reputation, and you do. And the difference, I think, between a shop and some other methods is that you do live in that. You do live in that sort of community. I mean, that's a big thing. Like when I work at Psychic Fair in Salem. I do my best job, but most of the people I'm reading are passing through.
Mm-hmm.
They're passing through. They want the reading, and it's mostly for entertainment purposes. I'll be honest, and they're, you know,
sure.
Some people are serious, but I'm not so terribly worried about. Now I do the best job I can, but I'm not so worried about the long term effect of that reading.
Right.
That's very
okay.
Immediate, and they think like that. But as a shop owner, you do have to worry about that because that person knows
yes.
Where you're at, and they can come right back to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you can deal
it's
with
important.
That.
And you have to deal with these people. You know, if they come back and they're upset or they're crying, or I've had people come to me from other shops and were literally afraid to take another reading. So I would do something
mm-hmm.
small for free and say, if you like my style and my approach, you could take it from there. It all, kindness is important, and kindness can probably get you far in this world. You know what I mean? And tarot is about helping other people. You know, in a way, you're like a therapist. I'm not saying that you are, but if you understand the tarot, you should have a good understanding of psychology and how to deliver that information to people. Once people are comfortable with that and they get it, then you have repeat customers, and then your word of mouth comes back to you, and that will help support the store.
And so, that is an essential tool. So,
yes.
How do people contact? So how do people contact you with your store? If they want to know more about you, how do they contact you?
Facebook is then probably the number one thing. So you can go to Breathe Closet on Facebook. And I also have my website. Most people contact me that way. Facebook is probably the most active or interactive, and people will then contact me that way. I have a lot of different pages there. So I have one for my tarot course. I have one for a general, it's called Breathe Closet Tarot and Divination Forum, and we talk about all things to do with divination in general. I have my business page there, Breathe Closet. There are a lot of different ways. And now we're, like I said, we're in Beltane mode. So now I'm working on putting the festival together. And so a lot of people are contacting me. A lot of vendors are contacting me as a result of that.
That sounds fantastic. I mean, and also, I'm because this year is going to be, and I'm telling everybody, pay attention to this Halloween, this Samhain. And I mean Halloween, okay?
Mm-hmm.
People go, oh, you mean Samhain. You go, okay, yeah, Samhain too, because that's our religious holiday. But I mean Halloween. This one is this is going to be one of those Halloweens people are going to remember for a long time. It's on a Saturday. It's a full moon.
Wow.
And it's the day that they turn the clocks back all on the same day.
Oh, my. I didn't even check into that yet.
Okay. This is why I'm
mentioning. I agree with you.
It's going to be off the, and if the weather's at all decent, it's going to be off the hook. This is the year I'm telling groups that if you're doing fundraising, if you're doing anything, this Halloween, pay attention to, because it's going to be the most hyped Halloween we've ever, and it's right before the election. It's going to be the most hyped Halloween you've ever
seen.
Oh,
my. Wow. We do a pretty big Samhain here because we get to do it outside, and we have a permanent altar outside. So we usually get, I don't know, you know, maybe 80 people, 50 to 80 people, depending,
mm-hmm.
because it's our last outside festival or event, not festival, ritual. And that'll be pretty interesting.
Right.
I didn't realize that all those things were happening that day.
Most people haven't realized. Well, as much as we're tied to it, we tend to, like everybody, we tend to have a short term. Look, I've known this since last year because I'm doing a ritual. I'm in the middle of a one-year ritual that I did last year, which was Mercury retrograde.
Mm-hmm.
Mercury retrograde on Halloween at 11:41 a.m., and then it ends up with a year later with a full moon. It's a very interesting set of – but, yeah, no, and I think that's something that people pay attention to. I think people pay attention at the last minute. But I do think that this year I've been mentioning it to shops and individuals that it's going to make it a very different type of Halloween this year. This one's going to be, and people go, what do you mean by Halloween? What, you mean Samhain? Go, no, Samhain is a holiday, a religious holiday. And how we practice that, and how we practice that is a whole different way. But there is this ambient holiday that's called Halloween that's kind of based kind of on, it's pop culture, it's society. It changes, but it's based a little bit on our Samhain. But it's still something that we see. It's more of like, you know, there's Christmas, there's the Christian Mass for Christmas. I tell people, there's Christmas is the holiday. Christmas Mass or Christmas is what was a different thing. So that's the difference I try to explain. But yeah, you know, this Halloween is going to be fantastic, and there's going to be a whole lot of energy out there. And you, like you said, you already get a lot of energy from that period of time. So my last question for the day, we know how to get a hold of you. And I want to thank you for taking us through your process and everything. So what do you think? So I'm going to ask you probably that. What do you think is the next big trend you see happening in the metaphysical or world that you're seeing that you're starting to ride into? What do you think is about to – do you see anything that's on the horizon?
I'm trying to think is what is new. You know, I hope I'm going to explain this right, because you are the new generation of – teachers, you know, our elders are starting to pass away. You know, Raymond Buckland passed away, and all of the original, I don't know if original is the right way to put it, but the next generation is now starting to come up, and that's the generation below me, because I'll be 60 next year. So now it's the next generation that will appeal more to the millennials and the Gen Xers and all that. That is what I'm beginning to see. So the next generation of elders, or I would say like the authors that I really appreciate would be something like Christopher Penzack. I think he is one of our best authors that are there. Unfortunately, we lost Raven Gormassi, who was a mentor to me and an amazing person. Another mentor is Lady Rhea, in New York, but I've known her since I was like 18 years old in my New York City days. It's the next generation of authors, and he's also experiential because he has his own temple. He runs festivals. It's not just about his books. So that excites me when I see authors like him coming up to the helm and really representing, you know, what, you know, my idea of paganism. You know, he's really heady and you know, learned, and I really respect a lot of the work that he does. So it's teachers like that I'm beginning to see, which is very helpful and encouraging to me.
I love Penzack myself. I think that he does a great job, and he's out this year. Last year he took a year off from his tours, and he's back up on the tour cycle again. I'll throw Byron Ballard as somebody who's emerging too. I don't know if you've heard of her much on her Appalachian magic. She's kind of really kind of eating this soil. So I think I do think that, and I think permaculture a little bit, but gardening. I think that, you know, we need a good gardening company inside the pagan community. We do. We need a good.
You know, that's
company.
A great idea. I'm an avid gardener, so yeah, I like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A lot of us are. I mean, I think that. And I'm not seeing real, so I'm always for, you know, more practicality. And so you can contact her on Facebook, Bernadette Montana.
Yeah, Bernadette Montana or Breed's Closet.
Breed's Closet,
and,
see.
Or on the my website is www.breedscloset.com.
And I want to thank you for being a part of the show today.
I thank you for asking me. It was wonderful to be able to be here today.
It is. It is. It's always wonderful to be here. So, folks, well, as you know, why don't you tell me what you guys are looking at for us to cover? We're continuing to cover. This is my year of commitment to bring you more of the community and great interviews like this. And we will talk to all of you soon. And so, remember, if you're out in Cornwall, New York, go visit Bernadette, and go
thank
out and
you.
Get there and get a reading too. So
that's
blessed
awesome.
Be, folks.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And
bye bye.
Everybody, have a great day. And So one last statement for everybody. Contact me at Ed the Pagan Show at any time. You can go Ed the Pagan Show, edthepagan.com. You know, just you can find me. I'm easy. I'm out there skirting the waves. And tell me what you guys want to talk about. And go to my Facebook page and answer the question. Have you ever been involved with a witch hunt or a witch war? I want to hear your involvement. So thank you, and blessed be, and have a great day. Make it a good
blessed one. Blessed be. Bye-bye.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.